Oh, hello. Is that Winslow Bum Boys Rugby Union Club? May one ask, do you have any job vacancies for a gorgeous centre? Oh, you don't. Never mind. Is that Hail Hooray Henry's 15? May one inquire, do you have room for a finely chiselled rah-rah player? You don't. I'd be willing to play second row. Hello? Hello?
Good old Yellow Pages. Not just there for the bad things in life like ordering a face mask, but also there for self-absorbed, egotistical people too.
Ah yes, is that Bramhall Chino wearing nonces? I'm calling about your advertisement, standing on your flank, with my hands in my pockets for 80 minutes. You'd be willing to give me a trial? Excellent. Yes, I'd be happy to put weight on and get out of condition. Absolutely, I cannot tackle for toffee. What? Yes, more than happy to throw a forward pass or two, old boy. My name? But of course, yes, it's Luther Barrell.
Coming up on today's podcast, yes, we wish Luther all the best, but as a Union player leaves, a United wire come up with their biggest win of the year. And as Warrington bake up a magnificent victory, Rimmer's Lot bakes up a cake of percentages. There's Daniel as he gives us his best Super League 13. There's a headstrong podcasting clash over a headed rugby ball. Plus, there's conversional statistics and a French prediction. This is What Would Brian Bevan Say?
Undoing the pants now. The podcast pants are coming undone as Rob London works his way up now to the beginning of the podcast.
Hello, I'm Rob London, and with Wire having returned to the brilliant Challenge Cup action, where are my two intellectually challenged podcasters? Firstly, a man cupping his statistics are tiding factual primrose and blue ribbon string theory. Yes, our very own prize trophy of the podcast. It's Sam Silver Sankey.
Hello, good morning. If I could have done an impression there of Brian Cox and string theory, but that's beyond my capability.
And also a man that cups his big, fat, sweaty tits to stop them bouncing up and down whilst polishing his tarnished trophy that shoots out theoretical rugby league framework. It's Dennis and the old Iron Waywell.
Right.
Oh, I thought you'd both be a bit more upbeat today, lads, after such a wonderful performance last night. Mm. You must be both. I mean, look, Sam's grinning away. He's very happy and... I know you were out thieving last night, Dennis, after the win. Do you want to tell all your listeners what you were up to? Yeah. Pinching corn on the cob in the fields?
Oh, well, no, it's just that's a normal activity down in Somerset. You know, that and picking scrumping apples is pick your own out the field. Don't worry about it.
I'm a little bit tired, I must admit. I've been spent a night in the rainforest. I'm struggling a bit today. So I'm going to play fullback, lads. You're going to do all the work up front. Just don't let anyone through to me today. We'll be fine. Okay, let's move on to the game. Warrington versus St Helens. The team was Wire, Ashton, Mamo, King, Gelling, Charnley, Austin, Ratchford, Hill, Darrell Clark, Cooper, Ben Curry. Was it Ben Curry? Was Ben Curry at 11, Sam? Was he?
Don't start.
Hughes and Jason Clark. Interchange bench was Ben Murdoch, Masilla, Philbin Davis and Danny Walker. The final score was Warrington 20, St Helens 18. Attendance was zero at the AJ Bell End Stadium. There's eight consecutive victories for the Wire now. So cue the highlights as Warrington become addicted to the drug of winning.
Instead is cut down by Ashton. Last play in the set. Tyre again. Inside for Roby. Roby to Percival. Smuggles the ball away. And Lomax. Lomax will finish. Some magical, near miraculous handling from St Helens. Ratchford pops it over the top. This will be Mamo to finish. Well, there's a collision of bodies in the corner. And the referee says forward pass.
What?
And a two-score lead which in a cup tie is so important. And over it goes. Austin Gelling is up there. What a catch! What a try! Wonderful stuff from Anthony Gelling. This is Gelling. Gelling straightens up, flicks away. Charlie,
he's in.
Back in a minute.
He's in.
Wow!
I'll try this.
Anthony Gelling, brilliant there. And Charlie, who's such a finisher, ain't never going to turn down an opportunity like that. From dummy half on the inside as well to Mamo, and that's good news here, Bless. This time Ashton is away, and once he is away, there is no catching. And Warrington have another. There quickly, Farge suddenly dashed down that blind side to try and create something here. Great hands, and Regan Grace in a corner. Wafer thin the lead. Austin. Hughes takes a deflection over the top. And, well, the referee was waiting there to see that Charlie touched it down, but he was very, very quick to put the whistle in his mouth. I don't think, well, he's given try on the field. Farge runs out wide. Kurt with a pass. Nagama with a try. Lomax looks up. Roby now, run down by Hill, but somehow smuggles the ball away to Lachlan Coote. The kick there towards Grace, but it bounces off the shins of Charlie and out of play. And just, and only just, Warrington win the cup tie.
Absolutely breathtaking cup tie.
We'll start before any of the tries, Sam. Those first few minutes, you thought we were on the back foot a little bit.
I did. I think I texted you along the lines of we need to hang in here. And I've actually got some numbers to back that up. On the first five possessions, don't want to go too much here, but our first five possessions up to the kick, we made 33 metres, 20 metres, 26, 23 and 29. St Helens, 57, 47, 65, and then ran it to score the try. So 80 metres, 50 metres and 68. We were struggling to hold on to them in that first 10 minutes.
First 10 minutes, though, Roby's on form, isn't he? Once the angina kicks in for Roby, he looks like a different player after about 10 minutes. And yeah, I'm pretty sure James Graham had a stroke after about 70 minutes.
Yeah. And Walmsley as well. I think Walmsley and the speed of their ruck was hurting us to begin with.
Dennis, you made a good point about Walmsley. He can't run without his legs.
Yes, can't run without his legs. And you know what? All his highlights reel that the BBC was showing before the match, if you notice, they were all people trying to tackle him up above. And of course, he's massive. So it's always going to be that he's going to break a tackle. Getting around his legs, falls over straight away, waste of time.
It's funny overrated. You should say that. Funny you should say that, because when I went to watch England versus Lebanon, not the Lebanon, just make sure we get that right. They didn't half split him in half that afternoon.
Yeah.
FSS. They were constantly going around his knees and bringing him down pretty quickly. Anyway, it didn't start well for Wyatt. On the 7th minute, Lomax crosses for Saints. Quick hands from Percival through the hands of James Roby and Zeb Taya with Lomax going over. Coote converts and it's 6-0. Now, I've got written down here a forward pass. I think the pass from Roby to Percival. Percival catches it round his back of his spine. It's that far forward. So when we do get on to the forward passes from Warrington, perhaps, it's best to think possibly that Saints did have a forward pass early on. Were you in agreement, Sam? You think that ball was forward?
Yes. Yeah, I shouted it at the time. And we only saw one.
Who did you shout to?
I was talking to myself, basically.
Okay. A bit like Brian Noble, on the sound of it.
Yeah. Oh, I tell you what, he got on my tits yesterday with his Walmsley washing machine analogy. What the bleeding hell was he? Anyway, yes, I thought it was a bit forward, but again, it came in that period exactly as we were saying, where they were getting all the momentum. It was actually a very good last tackle move by them, but yeah. It was forward. And if we have any St. Helens fans bleating a bit about us getting lucky, yeah. then maybe we should point them back to that.
They're not happy on their website this morning, actually. On Twitter, they're asking for the removal of their coach. They don't like him. You think they...
Already?
That's people at St. Helens for you. At the 13th minute, Ratchford dinks the ball through. Kings look to be on track to get the first score, but Coop just beats him to the ball and knocks it dead. I thought it was a bit odd that we kept kicking the ball, little grubber kicks through for King to chase, when King, probably out of all the backs, is the slowest. You know, had Mamo been in the centre, I think it would be fine, but that seems to be where we kept going every time.
For me, it wasn't, obviously it'd been brilliant to score, but it was more about creating pressure. I think if we go back just a minute or two, that the Lachlan Coote made an error when we ended up with a 40-20. And I think that changed the whole dynamic. Up to then, 11 minutes, we had been on the back foot. And then from 11 minutes...
And that was all a right cock-up, wasn't it? What a cock-up that was. Yeah.
But all the way through, we then had almost five full minutes of possession where the only time St. Helens touched the ball was to drop out. And that changed the whole context of the game. And on us getting a drop out, it's the type of kick we've called for ages.
Noble described Toby King as he could have been angrier with his chase. I mean, he does look like he gallops, canters. Did you know, by the way, that we had two gallops that played for Warrington? Dick Gallop.
Oh, yeah.
1903-04. He only had four appearances.
He went lame.
Gallop. Yeah. J.U. Gallop, 1919. Four appearances, one try. Yeah. So. Not good.
He twisted his leg in front of the Fletcher Street and they put a big thing around him and shot him, if I remember rightly.
Lovely.
From the resulting repeat set for Warrington, a lovely pass from Ratchford sees Mamo score, but the ref rules it out, calling Ratchford's pass forward. I'll start with you, Dennis. You wrote to me straight away and said, it was a try.
It was a lovely try. Great finish by Mamo. And even when you watch it in slow motion.
Wasn't it?
Yes.
And where was Gelling? Where was Gelling when Mamo scored that? Where was he? Nowhere to be seen.
On the other side of the pitch.
Exactly. Exactly, Sam. Yeah. Exactly.
So it was good.
Sam, forward pass?
No. You'd have been any team would have been disappointed to have that called. I mean, if we had the technology, we might have seen it was a few inches forward, it might have been flat, it might have been back. But if you're going to start calling them, you've got to start calling everything.
Is there a bit of a momentum rule, though, as well? Does it end up also where Ratchford finishes after he throws that?
You mean just the way it looked because he was running sideways? It might just have looked that way.
Now, who called that? Because I had a bit of a qualm with that lines person on the far side because he came on twice. Just because he knew it was the BBC, he comes waving on with his flag. It's like, get off.
Jesus. I like how you've called him lines person as well.
I know. It's good, wasn't it? Not fuckwit.
Yeah. That's what you called him on the text.
16th minute, Wire penalised for being offside and Coote steps up and nails the penalty to give Saints an 8-0 lead for offside. Right decision, do you think, Dennis? I mean, I like running the ball. I don't know why they're kicking for goals so early on in the game. They're supposed to be the entertainers, St. Helens.
No, they're not. The Hull KR are the entertainers, don't forget.
Most entertaining in rugby league.
I'm not entirely sure what you're saying here. What do you mean?
Well, I think they should have tapped it and just run the ball. I'm all in the Tony Smith now, you know, all about throwing Harlem Globetrotters kind of rugby league is what I want to see. Sam, you'd have taken the 2 points, wouldn't you? Being an accountant, you'd put
them
over
the stick.
Exactly.
Jesus.
21st minute, great bake from Clark puts the Wolves right on the front foot, passing to Austin, who then tries to release Matty Ashton, but Coop makes a quick decision to go towards Austin and puts in a try-saving tackle. And I think possibly someone was on the inside that would have walloped him, but Coop did very well there, Sammy. He positioned himself perfectly, a little bit different to Gareth O'Brien last week when Ashton scored that try at the end.
He did position himself very well, and initially I thought Austin had blown it. And it was only looking at it again. Actually, Ashton was a couple of metres behind Austin.
Yeah.
If it had been right up on his shoulder, it's an easier ball, isn't it? But because he had to give it him behind, there's still 2 metres. It gave Coot the chance. But you're right. He could have. I mean, if there's one man who throws a dummy and goes himself, it's Blake Austin. Yeah. And there he chose not to, didn't he?
Where was Anthony Gelling when that was going on? I didn't see Anthony Gelling running on the inside of Blake Austin. Where was he?
I can notice a theme coming here.
Jesus Christ. 29th minute and Wire finally score. Austin with a crossfield kick to, I don't know who it was. He soars above Regan Grace to claim the ball with a brilliant catch and Ratchford hits the post with the conversion, so it stays at 8-4. Okay, we'll finally give it to Gelling. What a try that was. Jumped up above Regan Grace. Not so much the jump above a pygmy, but the fact that he caught it, I think, Dennis, was the great thing about it.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you two have knocked Gelling all season, and I've been a big fan. And, you know, it's finally that it's actually come out, and, you know, you can see that he's played his best game, according to Price as well, at the end of the thing. So, you know, very strong in the air, big hands to catch that ball. Perfect, really.
Yeah, do you think Regan Grace was innocent there, Sam? Or was he guilty for that jump below him?
Not taking you on with that, but it came off a good 10 minutes from us. We'd had a lot of ball. I was starting to get frustrated that we hadn't scored.
Was the jury out?
Well, I was starting to get frustrated that we hadn't scored.
Were you shouting again?
Was the ball in our court?
No, but then move on. I'll tell you what was important. Mark Percival went off.
Yes.
Went off the pitch at 20 minutes. That left Gelling against Regan Grace, as you say, and Lomax. And I think Bentley was the one filling in there.
Yeah.
Now, he towers above those three. The three of them can stand on each other's shoulders and only just come to the same height. Yeah. So that gave him the edge for the remainder of the game. Down towers, that right centre.
Towers above them like he's in the witness box. That kind of look. 36 minute, Warrington have their second try. Josh Charnley goes over after a superb flick pass from Gelling. Charnley cuts back inside, puts the foot on the accelerator, and he's away. Ratchford can't miss. And we're in the lead, 10-8. I mean, a brilliant flick by Gelling, Dennis. You can't dismiss that.
Yeah, this is what we've been asking for from Gelling all year. He's like, you know, play with a bit of, a bit of that sort of strength and passing out the tackle. It'd be interesting to see his stats, Sam. Did he make any misdemeanours in the game?
Misdemeanours. Yeah, he made a misdemeanour in the second half. But I'll let him off on that one, given he'd already contributed. But we'll come to that in the second half.
He sort of threw that one like his hands were around his back, weren't they? Like, sort of like he was handcuffed or something, the way he flipped it across. And then on the stroke
of... I would like to go on record and say, I have got nothing to do with this.
Jesus. And then on the stroke of half-time, King breaks away. Mamo manages to get the ball to Ashton and he's in space. And there's no one stopping him as he races 80 metres to score. Ratchford extends the lead and it's 16-18. There again, there he is, Sam. I know we're sort of against each other on this. You like Ratchford at fullback. I like the X factor there at the back. Another brilliant try from the young man.
I like them both in the team. That's the issue, and it's a good issue to have. If we go to the start of that try, it's a high ball from St. Helens, and there's confusion between the fullback and the winger, Mamo and Ashton, and Mamo eventually makes the decisive move and takes a good high ball. I want Ashton in the team because he's our fastest player, he's exciting, he gets me up off my seat. The only thing I'm saying is, as an all-round player, Ratchford is a better all-round player. That's
so
all I'm saying.
Queensland always work on the assumption when they go into State of Origin that they have to pick their best 13 players. You find positions
and shoehorn them into a position. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're not talking playing Ashton at prop, but the fact we've also got a brilliant player on form, who I don't think has ever been given a real chance at Warrington, because I was a big fan of him at Huddersfield, and that's Marmo Might. So we've got to get Mamo in the team. We've got to get Ashton in the team. We've got to get Ratchford in the team. Who are we pushing out, Dennis? Who's making way to keep these? Lynham. So Lynham's gone. So Lynham goes. Who's in Lynham's place?
Marmite.
Where's Ashton then?
Fullback.
And Ratchford is where?
Where Widdop was, because he's gone.
Wow. It's a big call there from Dennis.
I'm thinking for next year. I'm thinking of the future. I mean,
what about this year, Dennis? This year when we're going to win it in COVID year, where are we going to put them all?
You know, the balance of the side looked really good. You know, I mean, I think if Ratchford's playing in the halves with Austin, what more are you going to gain from Widow? And I do know what the answer is to that, is that, you know, he's always there or thereabouts as someone makes a break or whatever. And that's his one of his strengths. But you know what? You know, I think he's proven that, you know, he's not going to be as needed as we thought in the halves with Austin.
I get that. It's pros and cons. I think we did lose something without... We have lost something without having Widdop up there the last 3 weeks, in that our left-hand side attack was just beginning to come right, wasn't it? Widdop, Curry, King were forming a beautiful link. To be fair, Patton came on for his last 9 minutes and put Curry through a hole against Castleford, but I didn't really see it yesterday. I didn't see the link play there that Widdop would have provided.
Dennis, were you surprised that Price dropped Curry yesterday?
I was, really. You know, I thought he'd been coming good the past few weeks.
Oh, so, you're so wrong.
He's going to come out with some stats now.
Ben coming, man. Yeah, all these tackles. All these, All these things you don't see.
Right, 45th minute. So close for Saints. Coot looks like he can get there himself. Passes to Knowles, but he's held over the line. There was a few of them in there, but I think Ratchford made the decisive. Sort of got under the ball there. He does seem to tackle. I don't know if his stats show that, but he does seem to tackle a lot more than Widdop at seven.
Last week in particular, I've not had the numbers from last night's game because, as normal in this country, we seem to wait till midweek to get anything on the bloody rugby league websites, whereas you watch NRL and it's updating live as you're watching it. But Ratchford... That's why he's fullback. That's good. Excellent fullback play, that, wasn't it, from Ratchford? That's a two, and I know we're having a bit of a laugh about it, but it is a two different facets of the game. Ashton's got pace to burn and ability. Ratchford held him up over the line that potentially stopped a Saints comeback early in the second half.
Do you think he'll have his nose done once he stops playing?
When he finishes,
I think, got to get that done, hasn't he?
The club are obliged to fix that now.
Yeah. 47th minute, the sensational in-form Mamo breaks down the wing. He looks for Ratchford on the inside, but it's a forward pass and Ratchford can't quite gather it in. Great pace again. And let's talk about Mamo. Just how good is Mamo at the moment? I mean, he's everywhere on the field non-stop.
He's my man of the match on this game as well. So I think, you know, we'll get onto it in a bit with your poll. But I think it was a bit unfair to put him in that poll because actually I think he deserves to be considered with one of the main first team players, really, rather than the fringe player. So, you know, I think he's in the team for me.
For me, forget, I know, obviously I like my stats and everything, but it's but more than that with him. No, it's more than that with Mamo. It's the energy he brings every time he's got hold of the ball. Even if he makes a fuck up, he's making a fuck up while trying to impact energy into the game. He's not passive. He's never passive, is he?
Have you got any stats on energy, Sam?
Yeah.
You do know it's in kilojoules.
Equal MC squared, that type of shit.
Yeah. Statistical term fuck ups as well. Yeah.
Just write that down, Dennis. We'll find him off air later. He said it twice, actually. At 51st minute, Saints create an overlap. Lomax finds Grace out on the wing, but a fantastic last-ditch tackle by Austin sees Grace drop the ball whilst diving for the line. Flaky Blake, he's been on form the last few weeks. Again, yesterday, he didn't quite make that gap, but he must make some metres, Sam, at the moment. Boy, he goes forward well.
Yeah, and he does. And he looks... Was it the Wakefield game? When he played, he scored a couple of tries. He might even have been a hat-trick. And the commentator said, he's played the game with a smile on his face all day today. And that's what he's looked like, hasn't he, the last 3 or 4 weeks? He's looked switched on and happy and running. And again, similar to what I said about Mamo, he's making positive... putting positive moments into almost every time he touches the ball.
You're moving really outside your stats today, Sam. You're going into the sixth sense all the time. You're not keeping in what you're normally keeping, are you? You've gone all
I was excited. What more do you say? But I think this was a real a real important 5 minutes in that second half. I think we missed an opportunity to put the game to bed here because...
We're going to talk about Austin, Hill now.
No, no, that's further on. Oh. Austin makes that outstanding extra effort to make sure Grace doesn't score in the corner.
Yeah.
We go down the other end 2 minutes later and Gelling drops the ball with a 2-on-1.
Oh, did he?
And he did. Jesus. He did. And when we've just seen him do two excellent things, that looked almost simple. That looked almost like a normal bread and butter catch and pass for a centre. And then moments later, we've got a replay, haven't we, with Grace, that I'm sure you're going to about to touch on. Grace actually scores in the corner. And that was just a 4 minute passage of play where they nearly scored and we stopped them. If we'd have gone down the other end and put a try down, it would have completely taken the wind out of St. Helens. Mm. But instead, they come back up and they're back in the game.
Yeah, they do. 54th minute, he's over in the corner, Grace. Coop converts from the sideline and it's 16-14. Dennis, I sent you a gif at this stage of me blowing into a paper bag. I was getting a little bit sweaty in the rainforest. You didn't seem to be like that. You seemed to think that we were still going to win.
Yeah, I'm just recovering from the gif of you blowing into a paper bag. just had to clarify it was a paper bag. I was quite aware of is that we'd really put St. Helens under the pump in the first half with a number of tackles. And I think that tackle count, I don't know what it looked like probably by this stage, but even then, you know, I think energy-wise, I think they were starting to really struggle. They put all their effort into the start of the first half, as we said, and tried the same thing in the second half. And I think it was really a case of just grinding them down. I think rather than going for that X-factor play, I felt that we should just continue to just keep them down in their own half and just play those short kicking games. And eventually they just wouldn't have the energy to sort of get a par in. So.
They are a different team without Wormsley on the park. When Wormsley is on the park, just go forward. When he's not there, do we think they're a prop down? I mean, it's lovely to see James Graham back in the country, but is it even, are you allowed to have a Zimmer frame on a football pitch? Mm. I'm not sure if you are, really.
It classes an offensive weapon. It was noticeable at the back end of the first half when Wormsley went off and they replaced him with Kyle Amore. And we took Cooper and Hill and Cooper.
He's gone Clark. All Ben Kingsley on Papillon again. Was, you know, he drifts off, Dennis. Yeah. He's done one of those.
It was Clark and Hill we took off. And we brought on Philbin and Ben Murdoch Masella. And we continued to make yards and they suddenly lost a bit of oomph up front. So I agree with what you're saying there. When Wormsley goes off, they look like normal props, the rest of them, don't they?
I almost thought their best forward was Seb Taylor yesterday. I thought a couple of occasions he made breaks.
Later in the game, he summed it up.
He looked and found his line and off he went. 59th minute, Ashton makes a mess of a high ball under the post. Saints cannot get over, though, from the resulting set of six. Why they were forced to make a goal line dropout, but Austin cleverly kicks it short from the restart and King regathers. We really needed that at that stage, Dennis, don't you think? I mean, my paper bag was actually ready to burst.
Dear.
And then all of a sudden, King jumps up and gets that one. Made a big difference.
Well, it's a well-practiced move, isn't it? You know, so why not take advantage of it? Because statistically, as Sam, well, he hasn't got the statistics, but would show that more often than not, King does come down with the ball. So, you know, when you recognise that you're under a bit of pressure, you might as well do it. And also, I think, is that a testament to their faith in defence at the moment that you would take that risk?
I think so. True. Well, yeah. You either give them the ball back on 40 metres or you potentially give them the ball back but have a chance again at yourself 20 metres out. So Dennis and I saw that, didn't we, on the opening day at Wigan. We tried that and got it back. I think we tried it twice and got it back once. So 50% chance of getting the ball back.
Tony Smith, King. Yeah.
Maybe it was Luther Burrell move. He's brought it in from where he played.
Union.
Yeah, never know. 64th minute, Charlie collects a deflection off Gelling's head. Kendall goes upstairs to the video ref, Liam Moore, who controversially awards a try. Ratchford misses the kick, but nevertheless, we're 20-14 up.
Why does he controversially award a try? It was a correct decision.
Well, Not according to the rules.
Yeah. Rule four of the knock-on.
Can I rule through the knock-on rules?
Yeah. Go on, then.
Okay. Deliberate, number one. A player shall be penalised if he deliberately knocks on the pass forward. Number two, accidental. If, after knocking on accidentally, the player knocking on regains or kicks the ball before he touches the ground, a goalpost, crossbar, or an opponent, then play shall be allowed to proceed. Otherwise, play shall stop and a scrum shall be formed except after the fifth play the ball. Number three, where charge down. Number three, charge down. To charge down a kick is permissible and is not a knock-on. Number four, is illegal to head the ball in a forward direction.
Now that was a new rule brought in for deliberately heading the ball.
Doesn't say this deliberate. Doesn't say deliberate.
But because St. Helens did that maybe 10, 15 years ago.
With the big, tall second row. Big, tall. Yeah. I was still living in England. Big, tall second row. He used to knock it over the line with his head and they scored.
Yeah, exactly.
There's nothing in that wording to say deliberate.
Warrington scored a very similar try 3 or 4 years ago. Then again, with my memory, because the other one was 25, it might have been 10 years ago at Wigan when we were playing again to the right wing. And I think this time it hit Curry and went forwards. But it hit Curry, not his arms, not his hands. It just hit him. It was no deliberate play. That's not a knock-on.
There is no wording in that rule that says deliberate. You keep putting deliberate in the sentence. Why? Okay. I'll read you the sentence again. It is illegal to head the ball forward.
Why? I agree that.
The reason he didn't call it was because he can't call a forward pass.
Yeah, well, it wasn't a forward. There's nothing in that rule about a forward pass.
No, exactly. But he can't give forward passes as the video ref.
Right. What? You're talking crap.
What's crap about that?
That's not a forward pass. You just
I hope
said it's
Gelling
a knock
gets
on.
A better trial.
It's a knock
on,
not a forward. it's a knock on, not a forward. It's either a knock on or it's not.
So you're saying, so I'm reading it to you again, one last time. It is illegal to head the ball forward.
Are we calling that heading the ball forward? Or did
well,
it didn't
come off his arse, did it?
No, that's fair. Yeah.
67th minute, close to Warrington's try line, Toby King picks up a grubber from Coote and looks to have raced away, but the ref calls him back, penalising Wire for a late flop, Chris Hill on Lomax. I was really keen to see that, Dennis, because Tony King was in full flight and he got pulled back.
Yes, Tony. I was wondering whether he was going to make the halfway line before he got tackled or whether he was going to get further. I think the call was a pretty shit one. It was completely off the ball. It wasn't particularly late. It was just sort of, you know, it made a meal of it. I think it was a load of bollocks.
Should we discuss Chris Hill then? Is Chris Hill becoming a little bit of a liability on the field now, Sam? What do you reckon?
No. Well, prior to coming back, we'd been calling, not necessarily you, but people on Twitter saying all these penalties he give. We went 4 weeks without him giving a single penalty.
But you know, when you look at the curve of like a player's career and you can see that there's plateauing and stuff like that, if you want to be ahead of the curve, you sort of say, I'm sorry, I love you, but you know, we've got to let you go. And
I'd accept that he's not quite where he was 2 or 3 years ago. Don't disagree with that.
We had a message off Alfie Wolf. Hill, he has been superb servant and highly regarded for the club, but Cooper and Philbin give us great, and then he put in brackets, possibly better go forward with less crucial penalties given away and on less wages. Better bang for their buck. Okay, 71st minute, great work from Farge and Lomax, who get the ball out to Kevin Naguana, who squeezes in the corner, and it's 2018. Thankfully for Wire, Coote's arse goes with a dogshit attempt at the conversion to keep Warrington 2 points in front. Absolutely shocking attempt, Sam, at that kick, wasn't it? He didn't half hook it.
It was at least 5 metres wide of the posts. And just to give you a little bit of a taster for what's coming up soon, before he took that kick, he was 33 out of 34 kicks from goal since restart.
Really?
And that was and that was possibly the first time he'd had a kick that had pressure on it. Real pressure.
He must take it.
He hooked it 5 metres wide.
He must take a lot of kicks in front of the sticks, though, Coop, mustn't he? The way Saints play, they run away and Regan Grace runs around under the sticks a lot of the time. I think they really rely on Coop. In just reading back through the highlight notes, his name just constantly appears, Coop this, Coop that. I think they really missed him at Wembley last year when he got that head knock and he wasn't quite the same for however long it was, 60 minutes of the game. But he's been a good find for them, I think, at Saints.
Yeah, he settles everything down. I mean, they had Ben Barber before that, who was exciting and thrilling and all that type of thing. But in terms of value for the club and probably value for the team and team ethic, Coote is way ahead of Barber, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, there's a frenetic last few minutes of the game, but the hooter sounds and Warrington have pulled off yet another brilliant win against St Helens. I'll go to you first, Dennis, for your man of the match. I think we already know who it is, but reasons why?
As we described during the analysis there, I think Marmamite gives you that energy, as Sam described, and that pizzazz gets everybody around him going. And his speed is outstanding. I think when Ashton scored his try, I was having a look at that and the players around and thought, actually, you know what? He could have probably done it himself and scored that try with his speed. Mm. I think when you look at the mistakes that have been made from, I don't know what his stats are, but you know what? He's been pretty consistent. I know in the past he's had some difficulties, probably when he's at fullback, but don't they all? But, you know, I think he's been really consistent. So, yeah, I think
you're right there, Dennis. He's put in four good performances in a row, hasn't he? Yeah, where he's actually bringing stuff to the team. Going to be a headache which one gets left out next week if they're all fit.
I'd just like to point this out as well before you get onto your picks, that we haven't even thought about Inglis coming yet, and we've been talking about all these players going for position. There's going to be a couple of people quite disappointed next
year. Well, but this is the thing, isn't it? One's going to go, isn't it? Someone is going to have to make room for Inglis. Someone's going to have to leave the club. I mean, we thought it was possibly Mamo, but whether he's played himself back into the team now, we don't quite know what's going to happen to Anthony Gelling as time progresses. So it might just all fit in anyway.
I'm almost feeling that I've got a Rob London.
Oh,
a Rod London Poster. Pick. Yeah, I feel like it was a team effort yesterday. I think we had. So I'm going to sit on the fence and say it was a team effort.
Oh, pathetic. This podcast is getting very you better change it up now, London. Don't go there.
I'm going to give it to Anthony Gelling.
Sorry?
Anthony Gelling. I'll give it to Anthony for fuck's sake. Move on. Jesus.
Very good.
This week's highlights had an undertone of Underworld and Born Slippy. Dennis, what's the slippiest thing you've managed to get your hands on?
Well, look, you know, this could go one or two ways, couldn't it? I had a single back in the 80s or whatever, Slippery People by Talking Heads.
Oh, yeah.
So that got me thinking about, Slippery People immediately comes to mind. Sir Philip Green, Greedy Bastard. Lance Armstrong and Dirty Den. But actually, when you think of Slippery People, think of no further of Roy Plunkett. He discovered PTFE, or polytetrafluoroethylene, which is better known as Teflon, registered in 1945. But the only incident I could think of with being slippy was I was in Italy, and I was in a very nice restaurant having some bread and olive oil. And this olive oil was quite slippy, and I went to pick a glass up, and I dropped the glass in a very posh restaurant. Now, here's the interesting fact, because that wasn't. That olive oil was Di Lorenzo olive oil. Now, does that ring any bells with anyone? Any Warrington fans out there? Any on the podcast?
No, doesn't with me. Come on, Dennis, fill us in.
Vincent Di Lorenzo.
Who?
He played at 1932-40 for Warrington. 18 appearances.
What you're saying, so he invented olive oil?
His family have an olive oil in Italy. He is actually, his family is from Italy, olive oil. So he could be considered to be the slipperiest sort of rugby league player. Although we did have Billy Pickup. 73-75, made 68 appearances. He was a specialist in wet weather conditions, so he was good at picking the ball
up. So it turns out that Tom Lynham's not the first Warrington player to squeeze olives. Was there any thing to pick up on the BBC commentary this week, Dennis, in you know, contrast to the Sky Sports of the last few weeks?
Well, the computer in Dubai was sort of flickering into action, but didn't really churn out any data, unfortunately. It seemed to be very sort of just zeros and ones, and we couldn't really take anything out of it. So nothing to report, really, on the commentary, being that it was in the script that we were going to be doing Sky Sports commentary this week, and clearly it was on the BBC.
My old man's got one complaint, and that is he thinks that the producer at the BBC spends too much time focusing on the coaches rather than the game. Yeah. And they actually almost missed the Ashton try doing that, didn't they? We didn't actually see the breakaway from it. So if we could just possibly keep on the game more than what's going off the game.
Mm. I mean, it's worth mentioning that big fan of Brian Noble, Sam. Do you want to give us any sort of analysis about his comments?
His bloody washing machines. What the fuck was he going on about? For 20 minutes he was going on about it.
Well, that's
and
a
then
short
he was on
rinse.
About his matchsticks on the end of his washing machine. What the... Anyway.
Now, last time out, Dennis looked at percentages by calculating that 3% of tries are lost due to rugby league posts. He also posted a complaint that his section was too far down the podcast running order. So to convert his grievance, here within the first 25% of the show, yes, right between the sticks, it's time for...
Tackle bags.
You're joking. Not another one? Oh, for God's sake, I can't stand this.
Well, I mean, it's a result of exceptional material generated by Tackle Bags that we finally find ourselves in the top of the bill of the podcast. Excellent. In the first items.
Sam, there's no point doing statistics. No one will be listening to it by the time you come round.
No, absolutely. You know, we might find that there's a big drop off on the podcast as once we've got this section over. But anyway, a special
thanks. People do drop off during this section.
No need to be like that. Anyway, special thanks to Gareth Monkey for his suggestions so far, but now he's finding it a little bit difficult. So pull your finger out, Gareth, and stop moaning. Anyway, last week we discussed the rugby posts, a popular subject with fans. We identified that during the season, as Robert just said, 3% of tries are thwarted by the posts on the rugby field. Whether that be a player running in, into them, being tackled, subsequently pushed towards the post, then or the ball creating jeopardy. Jumping and running around, it's all shite. So we thought, let's get rid of the post.
Can I just say, I've done the maths on this, and just, I don't want to break this to you lads, but it's 1.5% per post.
Excellent.
No, it's not. Good. It's 0.75% per post because there's four posts. Right?
Very good. Yeah, I'm glad I got my stats right. Absolutely so great there. We introduced the goal above stanchion hoisted post design, typically used by the NFL to create an end zone without the obstacle of posts. The system would increase the number of tries by around about 25 tries, providing more entertainment and mitigate any health and safety collisions with the posts. In addition to this, we could have also have twin rugby league clubs with the NFL teams to promote the game in America, rather than having the current model of setting up a team and therefore going bankrupt after a year or can't make it because of various flight issues, etc., etc. Anyway, 75% or 77% said they like that. Sandy Lyles, this is superb. You could design this with additional uprights like a fork to score a different number of points like Aussie rules. Yeah, the forking posts, that'd be very good. 20% said no. Linda Lablier, I've been diagnosed with objectophilia, and for the 30 years I've been in a relationship with my washing line prop. I find it quite distressing, the thought of removing those sexy uprights. Ooh. Well, there you go.
So, disgusting.
Not everybody's cup of tea.
Absolutely disgusting.
3% said other. This is Billy's bed sock. Shove it up your end zone. Anyway, so I think it was a quite a popular one. Statistically, showing that Tackle Bags is on form. We're in the top of the game. This week, we're not going to move away and pick up another topic.
He's struggling here, Sam. He's not ready for this pace, is he, at the top
he's
of the
not, no,
at
no.
top of the show.
No.
Well, moving on to this week's topic, I want to look at the topical problem of the squirrel tackle. We've come up with the new anti-squirrel tackle solution called the Nut Alarm Detection System, or NADS for short. You don't have to write it down, Sam. That will detect improper conduct. Now, this would be have a player wearing a special piezoelectric jockstrap beneath their shorts. It contains 10 carefully placed strain gauges in around the groin area. And when triggered with a pressure of 0.69 newtons that is applied to the testicles, will send a signal to the referee, either as a vibration in his own shorts or a high-pitched screaming noise in his earpiece. This will eliminate the player's testimony after the game and subsequent investigations, allowing the referee to take immediate action and penalise the offending player. So, of course, the NADS jockstrap will come in a variety of colours, possibly just red and grey, and will be widely available with a vibration alarm system that can be used for other leisure activities. Just looking at some investors now, I was thinking of something like... we do need some capital investment. So if there's any sports brands out there, then please get in touch. What do you think about that, lads?
You make them electric as well. So if someone puts their hand on them, they get an electric shock.
That was Gareth's suggestion, but being that we're not an S&M podcast, I thought I'd leave it there.
If it was a rain, wet weather, would that cause a short circuit and the player themselves just be writhing around?
No, it's got an IP rating of 64, so it's completely weatherproof as well. So, yeah. Rob, you've not said much. Are you worried about the edit still?
No, I'm not. No. What Hopper Watty here put a finger up someone's arsehole. Are you going to put one of the sensors up there as well?
I don't know.
You're allowed for moisture then, won't you?
Oh, Jesus. Move on.
Autumn Watch, starring Chris Packham, set to return to BBC Two this week after their interactive squirrel cam catches winger Tom Lynham gathering nuts for hibernation. The RFL inserts a backlog Super League fixtures list into the Hadron Collider, with results showing current season will be completed by 2025. And to commemorate the stuffed seal in Warrington Museum that was shot at Bridgeport 100 years ago, a reconstruction will take place in the River Mersey with swimmer Professor Steve Broomhead.
Right, you've heard the headlines. It's on to the stories. Tom Lynham has been banned for 8 games after being found guilty, as Janice has just pointed out, in tackle bags of grabbing testicles of Castleford's Alex Foster. Lynham, 27, was charged with a grade F offence, a charge he contested, but the Rugby League disciplinary panel ruled their decision was correct. Sam, what do you make of this, mate? I mean, it must have gone on before this time, but all of a sudden now all the games are being shown on Sky, etc. Yeah. What a plonker.
That's the best way to sum it up. What really is to gain from that?
Having 8 weeks tackle off?
There is the guilt
worked out? How did he work it out?
That would be my only concern. It's not so much the guilt bit, is it? The only concern is Makinson did an equally stupid thing, and we were rightly very critical of him. But he had his downgraded from a grade F to an E.
Why is that? Is that because the bollocks are smaller? What was the reason behind that?
Exactly. He should have been an F as well. But Lynham, bloody idiotic. Absolute idiot.
Gets 8 weeks off, though, doesn't he?
He does. And last year, he got banned twice as well last year. So
Bit of a pattern appearing here. Interesting.
Do you think that this now puts his place in permanent question? Obviously, we talked about, the positions of where people are playing. That he's 8 weeks out now. People have got a chance to prove themselves, and he could actually be like shifted on at the end of the season.
If you're out of the team for 8 weeks and someone comes in and does well, whether that be Mamo, whether it be Ashton, or both of them, you're at the back of the queue then, aren't you?
Tony Smith is making it all comfortable to come in, trying to defend it a little bit.
Grooming him a little bit, yeah. Something going on there, so... Wait and see. The news Madam Boyd broke several weeks ago has finally made official by the club of Luther Burrell's departure from the Warrington Wolves. The club's statement read, "The club can confirm that Luther Burrell has been released from the remainder of his contract with immediate effect. We would like to thank Luther for his efforts and wish him all the best for the future." Luther responded, "I would like to thank everybody at Warrington for the opportunity to play some rugby league. To the fans, a small thank you for supporting me and welcoming me into the army. I go back to being a fan and supporting from a distance." Can we read anything into that by small? A small thank you.
Yeah. So the word small wasn't needed, was it? Other than to have a bit of a go. I'm surprised you didn't play the little soundbite in there of you receiving that text.
Just to sort of decipher all this, we had John Clark on the podcast not that long ago, who's now the conditioner at England Rugby Union and the previous conditioner at Warrington. Here's what John had to say on Luther Burrell's switch of codes from Union to League.
If you look at what Luther was when he was at Rugby Union, he was a big boy. Like, he was a big lad. But he might only get the ball three times and make three tackles at centre in Rugby Union. So he could make that blockbusting. Now, he's come to Rugby League and he's lost 8K. Yeah, he's lost. He's lost 8K. But yeah, I'm not talking about his rugby. But, you know, from a physical point of view, he's had to lose 8K because the game's different. And and if you look at what he now looks like the rest of them.
I think this sums it up, Dennis. I mean, we spoke about this briefly in the week. I always thought that Luther's best attributes was his power, his size. Sam spoke about it when he saw him down at London, how big he was. If they possibly put him on the wing, similar to Twigamala, he may have actually caused a little bit of impact close to the line, but he just clearly wasn't fit enough. With Twigamala, Wigan got him fit and managed to keep that weight and size on, but Warrington just seemed to have stripped it all away. It seemed a silly mistake by Warrington.
I put this down to them not having a particular plan for him. It seemed to sort of say, right, we're going to get you fit, we're going to strip you down, and then see where we're actually going to put you in the team without actually sort of doing as you describe. He's up front, he's saying, right, actually, this is where we're going to mould you to, and then take him down that path. So I think there's a bit of an unfortunate sort of journey that he's been on in that respect. But, you know, you can't take away the fact that he probably just wasn't going to make it. So,
Sam, your sort of conclusion to all this?
An expensive experiment, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, let's not forget, and Sam makes a good point there, it cost us a lot of money, didn't it, as well? So,
not on the salary cap, but as a club, someone's been paying his wages a lot of money.
Yeah. And something along the fact that Sam used a very offensive word about Luther Burrell, calling him.
Yeah, we won't mention that. I guess perhaps we'll never know what really happened behind Luther's departure, with the truth being masked. Although, ironically, in a time when we all need to wear face masks, now is probably not the time to be stripping them away. The government has approved attendances of 1,000 at the following games on Wednesday, the 30th of September. Wigan versus Saints, Cass versus Hull, Huddersfield versus Hull KR, and Leeds versus Catalans. But Salford and Warrington on the same day is not approved because of the area's recent high COVID-19 infection rate. We are getting there, lads, a little bit. But since this sort of decision's been made, it's getting a little bit more worrying over there, I think, isn't it?
Yes, you know what? I'd just like to say something about Ian Watson. If we were looking for the next coach, he would be my next coach. I think I've mentioned it twice now. But he was
very... Are you saying Price out, Dennis? Are you saying Price out?
I'm starting it now. I might as well start it now. Price out, get Watson in. But the fact that, you know, he's very good at sort of looking at the detail of what he sees in his side, what he can get out of his side. He surmised the game yesterday by saying, look, Challenge Cup is probably our only objective because of the size of the squad and what this season will do to, you know, the overall squad, needing that you need a big squad. Now, that isn't just it, but I think the way his approach is that might cause us a few problems when we come to play Salford. It might not just be a sort of rollover, oh yeah, we'll get through to the final, get past Salford. It could be quite difficult.
Well, let's talk about that semi-final then. So you don't think we're going to win, Dennis? You're putting the...
I'm not saying we're not going to win. But I think, you know, after playing St. Helens, there's that degree of like, well, you know, we've beaten the top team in the league. And, you know, oh, it's only for Salford. Yeah, we'll easily beat them. I don't think that'll be the case. I think we'll struggle.
When is that semi-final, Sam? Is it Easter 2023?
Yeah, subject to COVID restrictions, it's only 2 weeks away.
Is it really?
Okay. October the 3rd, I think it is, and then the finals 2 weeks after that. We're due to actually play Salford just 4 or 5 days before that in the league. So whether that double header could have something to do with it.
Let's not bring up heading again, Sam. Gee, let's not go there again.
Okay. Oh, God.
Dear me. And finally, not so much news, but a rumour with Gareth Widdop rumoured to be heading back to Australia. This is something that's been all over the websites we've seen. It's over Twitter, it's over Facebook. Doesn't matter where you go, this rumour won't go away. So we contacted Gareth Widdop's agent this week just to make sure and to see where Gareth stood. I'll just get to the message. So his agent is here at SFX Sports Media in Sydney. I know him quite well, Paul Sutton. I've done a bit of work for the company in the past. So I value what Paul says, although Sam did take his quote to pieces and sort of come out with possibly a different suggestion, as has Dennis. So I wrote to Paul Sutton. Paul Sutton wrote back. He said, "Hi, mate. At this stage, he is definitely staying at Warrington. I haven't spoken to any Australian clubs." So we've got "at this stage" and "definitely" in the same sentence, Sam. You're a little bit worried.
I think it seemed to suggest to me that they've done nothing proactive about leaving, but he didn't dismiss it straight out of hand, did he? So take him at face value that at this stage, Gareth Widdop will be a Warrington player next year.
I take that as, at this stage, we haven't signed on the dotted line with another club.
You're really reading between the lines, you two lads, aren't you? You really are.
No, take him at face value for now.
We also heard from Brent Richardson this week, who is Greg Inglis's agent, because another rumour that wouldn't go away was that possibly Greg Inglis was coming over to the UK this year. It was mentioned in a few of the magazine rugby league papers that the rumour was going out. I spoke to Brent. He laughed and said, "Media gossip." So I think we can probably clear that one up, that Greg Inglis is not coming to Warrington this year. And Gareth Widdop will possibly, at this stage, still be at Warrington. Okay, the saying goes, a biologist, a mathematician, and a statistician go to the North Pole and come across a gang of penguins. "Look," the biologist shouts, "there in the middle of the gang is a white penguin." The mathematician replies, "We only know the penguin is white on one side." To which the statistician says, "No, it cannot be a penguin, as penguins come from the South Pole. It must be a zebra." So to pick a penguin, and to inform us no doubt that the collective noun for penguins is actually raft when they're swimming in the sea, or a waddle when they're hanging about on dry land. Yes, back again, our very own emperor, king and royal podcaster, it's over to...
Statistics, caveats, bollocks. Listen up, you norms, it's time for Sam to talk shite. For 5 minutes... It's Sam Sankey's shitistics. No. Dick's data. No. Anal cyst. No. Twat stats. No. Statistics. Yes. That's it. It's time for Sam Sankey's statistics.
I can write next week's intro for you if you like. Just look up Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and Babel Fish. That ends up with a zebra crossing.
Oh.
So there you go.
Yeah. Do you know what? When I watched that classic BBC Two show all those years ago, it was on the radio first, wasn't it, before
Arthur Dent
arrived on BBC Two. Did you ever think you'd have a sort of, you know, phone in your hand that could do it all for you?
Space 1999. Right,
yeah.
The only sci-fi program to have a handheld visual picture communicator on anything. Everything really? Else completely missed. Yeah, you look at anything,
Star
any
Trek.
Other futuristic.
Yeah, none Star of that. Trek.
Absolutely shit. No, it was just a shitty radio, wasn't it?
So, carry on, Sam.
Last week, I was asked to make up on the spot the kicking percentages for Stephen Ratchford. I better get my pen out and actually work out some numbers. And as I started to look at them, I became quite amazed by what's happened since restart. Looking at the top four goal kickers in Super League, Hardacre, Ratchford, Richardson and Coote, that's top four in terms of how many conversions they've made. And before the lockdown, they were kicking it. Hardacre was kicking at 76%, Ratchford 83%, Richardson 76%, and Coote 92%. But since the restart, Hardacre's upped his game to 78%, Richardson's upped his game to 87%, Ratchford before yesterday was kicking at 91% since restart, and Coote at 96.8% since restart. So I'm wondering whether no crowds mean, the kickers have got silence and are not put off. All those years of the
fucking miss it, you twat, miss it, you twat.
Yeah. Ooh, and things like that. Does that actually have an effect? Are some of the more mediocre kickers not able to zone out from the crowd?
So are you saying that at the British Open Golf, if everyone stood behind, you know, Colin Montgomery on the team and, oh, you fat bastard, that he'd like slice
he'd
it
soon
into
lose
the
it. Yeah. He'd soon lose it. I mean, for instance, Lachlan Coote kicking at 97% last year, right through the season, he only kicked at 73%.
Yeah.
Ratchford kicking at 91%. Last year, throughout the season, he only kicked at 80%. So I think there's something in for that. But then I've looked a bit deeper into Ratchford, and you can see a huge improvement through Ratchford's years.
Mm.
Ratchford, 2017, was kicking at 72%. Then he got the job permanently. He upped it to 75%. 2019, as I say, he went to 80%. Before lockdown, he was kicking at 83%. Since lockdown, he's kicking at 91%.
What about yesterday, though? So, he's missed a few, hasn't he? That must have brought him down a fraction.
And that, and therein lies the key of what I said about Coote. When, as soon as Coote got put under pressure, no crowd still, but put under pressure, 3 or 4 minutes to go, 5 minutes to go, a kick to level it from outside, and he hooks it, doesn't he? So it's quite interesting to look at that. But Lachlan Coote is not the best kicker at St Helens.
Isn't he?
Mark Percival is, who's currently on 100% this year, five out of five. Gareth Widdop is on two from two, and Deck Patton one from one, so they're at 100%. But there is one person that is perhaps a little bit more relevant to look at, and that's Oliver Russell at Huddersfield. He's only taken 8 kicks, but that's over 3 games standing in for Caesar, and he's yet to miss. So if he gets up to 12 or 15, then it'll be worth looking at. But Ratchford is suddenly currently kicking at a better percentage than Brett Hodgson did when he was the main kicker for us in 2011 and 2012. Hodgson kicked at 81%.
What was the decibel level then that puts them off? Is there a threshold?
Yeah, and a crowd of 1,000 or more. So we'll see what happens when they all come back next week.
Oh, right, okay. Did that without touching his face.
Now,
I did.
Speaking of conversions, I went on to Google and I typed in convert to, and I've got the top 5 conversions that people convert to if you type them into Google. Does anyone want to have a guess any of the 5 might be?
Islam. Well, boy to a girl. A boy to a girl. Convert a house. Or a barn. There's three options.
Number 5, convert to metric. In Britain, metrication is formally endorsed by the government in 1965, but the imperial system, 55 years on, is still commonly used, with the mix still confusing people to this day. Metrication in the kitchen is changing the fastest, with 50% of bakers using grams, millilitres and litres. 1 in 4 people still use yards, but 2 out of 3 people still don't know how much they weigh in kilos or how tall they are in centimetres. So,
it's a bit of a funny thing, really, isn't it? Because, like, when you go by road, we're always going in, like, miles and yards, we talk about.
So. Does Sky and BBC still show the players' stats in stone? Is that still going on over there? Or
Actually, yes, they did show them in stone yesterday on BBC.
Mm.
But on the websites, they all say kilos.
I notice in Australia, no one has a clue what a stone is or how tall they are at 6 foot or whatever else. It's I go walk around and say I'm 6'1" and everyone points me in the right direction.
But we still describe like running at speed in miles per hour as well.
Number 4, converting male anatomy to female anatomy is the
top one
in Google. Yeah. If you want this conversion, Dennis, I'll tell you how we do the operation. It requires removing your sad little cock. An incision then is made in your scrotum and your flappy bollock skin is pulled back, thus reshaping your gonad tissue to appear more female and constructing a vagina. So let me know.
Does it take the wrinkle?
Didn't need that detail.
Number 3, convert to religious faith. A census in 2011 found that 71% of the town of Warrington declared their religion as Christian, around 20% said they had no faith, and 0.3% declared themselves as Jedi. There are also in Warrington, according to the census, 180 pagans, 120 spiritualists, Madam Boyd, and 39 witches. I think I went out with a couple of them. Number two, one close to my heart, convert to veganism. How many vegans do you think there are in the world, I hear you ask?
Not really.
How many vegans are there in the world, Rob?
3% of the world's population now are vegan. But in the UK, we've gone that extra 1%. Now 4% of people in the UK are vegan.
I hope they're fucking proud of themselves. Have you seen that? Yeah. Here we go. Yeah, but you just saw that programme with Richard Attenborough last week and they're cutting down the rainforest with all this fucking soya. That's not really doing the world any good, is it?
David Attenborough, you mean?
Who did you say?
Richard Attenborough. Film.
Oh, Richard.
Doing Gandhi, are we? A study showed that 32% of the population in the UK had no intention whatsoever of changing their diet. But amongst rugby league fans in the north of England, that rose to 99.2%. And the number one, what do you think the number one convert to is in Google?
Unleaded petrol.
Convert to PDF. Portable document format. Although amongst the younger generation, it is now known as an acronym for portable dick friend. I'm converting to 10 games. Do you think with Bake Off coming back on the telly on Tuesday that they're having a bash down at Rimmer's Lot?
Oh, absolutely.
And time now to head over to Rimmer's Lot at the home of the National Rugby League Museum. Such a barbaric sport, isn't it? One prefers the Horse of the Year show and those magnificent stallions. In fact, last year at our annual village Chipping Norton Gymkhana, my husband got so excited by the equestrian extravaganza and dangling me his big carrot, one was left having to ride side saddle for weeks.
That's 20 kilos of resilient flour, 5 tucklespoons of baking soda versatility, and a little kick of my DNA sweetener.
Stevie, how's our RFL entry to the Great British Bake Off coming along? I'm told we have to get it down to the Huddersfield Town Hall by 4 p.m, otherwise we'll miss the regional judging.
Oh, gee, Ralphie, why does it have to be so big anyway?
Well, I'd like to make sure that we stand out next to Robert Elston's invisible sponge. And besides, there needs to be enough to go round for this week's guest judges of Nigel Wood and Professor Broomhead.
No need to spit the dummy, Rolfie. I'll have them ready quicker than Sidda Lydia Koala applying for paternity leave.
Now, don't get cocky, Stevie. And did you order the backup Black Forest Mini Gatto cupcakes from that bakery on Higher Hitler Street?
You mean Failers? Yeah, although I did say they needed to go upstairs to check them first. Here just goes, Ralphie, a baker's dozen.
Oh, they look a bit dishevelled. We need all these cakes to display in the museum to take advantage of the bake-off publicity at the moment. Are you sure they're the best 13? The number 8 looks like it's got a soggy bottom.
Yeah, I know. I think Lewis Johnson baked that one. Although that number 2 did come with a gnat allergy warning.
Now put them over there on the silver points platter on that table and price them up. We can serve them to the general public, Stevie. And don't forget, we can always change the price points later with a percentage value. Oh, excuse me, young man. Are you accompanied by an adult? Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Kaplan. I didn't realise it was you. My eyesight is going downhill. You could say I've got 40/20 vision nowadays.
Oh, don't worry about it, Ralph. I'm just delivering the vanilla sponge that you ordered. Did you know that vanilla sponge originated off the coast of Central America? Rick, by the People's Rugby League Front of Belize, of all places. It was made, and this is the most interesting bit of all, it was made by the settlers during the 18th century. Now, many people think that that's not the case, but of course it is the case. And I'd like to add that also that if you look more deeply into the statistics of Belize rugby, that you'll find that...
Yes, thank you, Philip. I really must get on. I've got to get these cakes down to the town hall before you talk the icing off this RFL President Claire Balding's Genoese pink and yellow angel cake.
But I thought you might want to chat about it, Ralph. You know, I was thinking we could have a cup of tea and a catch-up. You know, I've got an amazing story. You'll love this one. Sandy from Toronto has managed to grow the percentage Canadian fan base, would you believe it, in Armley? Yes, since she did her Challenge Cup draw and pulled the balls out of Dave Wood's bag.
Look, Philip, I'm a little busy at the moment, and I haven't really got time for your ramblings. You can see I've got my hands full of all these patisseries.
Yes. That cream horn looks like it's gone all stiff.
Well, that's no way to talk about Stevie.
Right, Ralph. Well, I'll be off then. Let me know when you're free to talk. And don't forget, I'm always available for 3, 4, or even 5 hour after-dinner speeches.
Oh, here's the profiteroles from Dave Woods' ex-wife, Ralphie. Shall I box them up?
Oh, excellent. She does have lovely buns.
Do you want me to divide the cake into slices, Ralphie? We're expecting that Lee Crook's coach trip from Hull later today with a party of 15.
No. Stand down, Stevie. This is my speciality. Robert was very jealous with my percentages when I got us out of that little points jam last week. Now, come on, quickly, pass me the cake knife. There you go. 5.714% for each of them and 20% for Mr. Crooks. Even my RFL equations take in account for the fractional fat bastard.
Oh, you're a bloody genius, Ralphie. You're like Jesus feeding the 5,000 with the loaves and the little fishes. You don't even use your fingers to count.
Well, my fingers are smelling a little bit fishy, Stevie, after my new pescatarian cake, made with cod liver oil soaked ladies' fingers.
Oh, sorry, Ralphie. I didn't want to say anything. I thought that was from your date with Tanya Arnold.
This week's reviewer, Simon Mayo.
Simon Mayo was, or is, a son of a clergyman, isn't he? So
stop talking about Simon Mayo, Simon Mayo. Yes, get on with it. Talk about Rimmer's Lot.
Well, he'd be enjoying that. For the first time in weeks, I was going through and I was thinking, this isn't too bad this week. And then you had to throw in fish fingers at the end, didn't you?
It was disgusting.
Ladies, smelly ladies' fingers.
You can tell who's done the majority of the script writing the past couple of weeks, can't you? Just give us the structure. Dirty London.
Now we've reached far enough through the season to take a look at Super League's best current 13, but sometimes it's hard to choose when you cannot see the wood for the trees. So with Daniel recently changing jobs and having a spell of gardener's leave, here's Daniel with his horticultural work as he trims back the bush to discover a cracking selection.
Fullback was probably the hardest position to decide of them all. I think there are 5 genuinely outstanding fullbacks in this competition at the moment. But I've picked Niall Evolds to go in my team. 9 tries and 8 assists. Very, very good numbers for a fullback playing for a bottom half side. He beat off competition from the likes of Sam Tompkins, who has been somewhere near back to his best for Catalan Dragons this season. Bevan French, a fabulous player for Wigan. Lachlan Coote. I didn't pick Coote because he missed a couple of games. But when he has played for St Helens, he's been superb. And of course, Stephen Ratchford, who's had one of his best seasons at Warrington so far. I've got Tom Lynham and Regan Grace as my wingers. Lynham has been in really, really good form for Warrington this season, both offensively and defensively, with 7 tries to date. And Regan Grace, well, he's just a fantastic winger, isn't he? Incredible pace, searing to watch, very, very exciting player. My two centres, Israel Folau, very controversial character, but has come over to Super League and has been really, really impressive for Catalan so far. You can tell that he's a cut above so many players in this competition. And a player who I think is really underrated, which is Carlos Tuimavabe at Hull FC. 5 tries in 9 appearances, very impressive for Hull so far. I did consider Toby King. I think King has had a much improved season. However, he didn't start the season too well. First couple of games, a little bit shaky. So in order to get a broad outlook, I've gone with Tuimavabe and Folau at centre. My two halfbacks are Johnny Lomax and Jackson Hastings. Both have 13 assists to their name this season, so both having very impressive seasons for St Helens and Wigan respectively. I also consider the likes of James Maloney, Aidan Caesar, Albert Kelly and briefly Blake Austin as well, but for me Lomax and Hastings have been the best throughout the competition, not just in fits and starts. Prop forward, for me, the outstanding player in Super League so far this season, Alex Walmsley. 7 tries and 3 assists, which for a prop is absolutely unbelievable numbers. I felt that when Luke Thompson left to go to Australia, Saints would miss something, but Walmsley has stepped up hugely. And joining him in the forward pack is fellow prop Mike Cooper, who has been arguably Warrington's player of the season so far. He's put in a string of terrific performances and has led the forward line unbelievably well. My hooker is actually Sam Powell. Now, despite Paul McShane topping the Man of Steel standings, I've gone with Powell purely because of his stats. 7 tries and 3 assists. You hear a lot about Roby and Clark, but Powell has outperformed them so far this season. My second rowers are Liam Farrell and Ben Curry. Farrell with 5 tries and 4 assists, and Curry with 2 tries and 6 assists. So both popping in the numbers, very good for second rowers, and both having good influences on their team so far. And finally, Morgan Knowles, our loose forward, rounding the team off. So my team, Niall Ebbles, Tom Lynham, Carlos Tuimavabe, Israel Folau, Regan Grace, Johnny Lomax, Jackson Hastings, Alex Walmsley, Sam Powell, Mike Cooper, Liam Farrell, Ben Curry and Morgan Knowles.
Now, I'm going to have to turn to you on this one, Sam, because I've got nothing on this. I don't watch enough rugby league to put my 13 together. What do you think of his team?
Thought it was a decent team. I can't argue with that if you were putting that team out on the pitch. I did wonder at a couple of them whether Niall Ebbles is really the best fullback. But then again, Daniel's talking about how he's seen it in terms of form this year. But if Sean Wayne was putting a Great Britain team out, I don't think he'd have Ebbles at fullback.
Would he have Lynham in there after getting an 8-week ban?
I know.
He loves Lynham, Daniel. He's got pictures all over the house of Lynham, I think.
I think he liked his character, doesn't he? It's a good team. Interesting second row. Farrell, I've always been an admirer of Farrell, even though he's a nasty Wigan git. But he's coming to the end of his career. Can't argue with Walmsley at prop forward. Not sure I'd have Sam Powell there at hooker.
You've not mentioned Curry yet, Sam. Just let's get there. I'll give you a chance.
Well, I can't not have Ben Curry somewhere in the team.
What did you make of his performance yesterday, Sam?
You two thought he was exceptionally quiet, didn't you? He was quiet. But then again, he's been on fire for the previous 4 or 5 weeks, so I'm not going to kill him over one quietish game.
He's got Alex Walmsley in there. I've already said, I think if you're a good defence, they'll just take him down on his legs. He won't make any yardage. There's plenty of other props knocking about.
You're like Ray French, aren't you?
Oh, take him down his legs. It's simple. I know, but all you have to do is watch a bit of video footage and you think... Tackling around the legs.
The young Blackbrook amateur.
I think he went to Leeds, didn't he, Walmsley? I think he was did engineering at Leeds Poly or something at one point.
Did he?
Yeah, I think that's where he started.
What about Folau being in there, I mean, that's a bit controversial, isn't it? Is it?
Yeah. I think it's very controversial.
He would like to convert half of his team to religious faith, wouldn't he?
Do you like Folau? Do you think he's a good addition to a side?
I don't think I've seen him play. I honestly haven't seen him play.
He didn't play when he was in Australia, did he not?
Well, he's been playing AFL for years and rugby union. He hasn't played league for a long, long time.
We've had a couple of issues with this at our club before as well. It's trying to divorce the player from their private life, isn't it? Israel Folau was.
Oh, I'm looking forward to
a
this.
Wonderful. Was a wonderful rugby player.
Homophobe.
You know, great talent, that type of thing. And as a rugby player, he is an addition to Super
homophobe.
League. Just but an at addition. Some point, it's at some point, you've got to look at
homophobia.
What values they have. So,
okay, and there's the legal brilliant. Stance of the what would Brian Bevan say?
It was like praise be all of a sudden with Thora Heard, that wasn't it? The way he summed that up, absolutely
well done,
beautiful. Daniel's soundbite there, accompanied by the genius of Kate Bush and the song Woman's Work. Talking of women, Sam, you'll be pleased to know that all our hard work on the podcast has paid off, with our female listener demographic having hit an all time high of 12%. What would you put this rise to femininity down to, Mr. Sankey?
This is pre-Rimmer's Lot,
Yeah. Be back down to single figures by Monday afternoon.
Oh, you like a single figure, you absolute sexist pig.
I know.
And time now for the Twitter vote. Is that it? Is that all I have to say? That one line? I have to say more in lockdown letters. This is so insulting.
Well, obviously, we don't know the results of the election yet, but what we do know is that about 4 in 10 of us probably didn't even bother to vote. Pollsters have a name for people like this. They call them morons.
Oh, that's ridiculous. Why did Paxman get the big line? This is utter horseshit.
Yes, we got 2 Twitter votes this week. The first one was, with the 7 first-team players missing from action, which Warrington player has impressed you the most? We gave 4 options. A, Ellis Robson. 2, Leilani Larte. C, Lewis Johnson. Or D, Jake Marmomite. Well, there was a clear winner, although Dennis has already pointed it out. He probably shouldn't have been in the poll. And that was Jake Mamo with 75%. Larte got 10%. Robson got 13%. And poor Lewis Johnson, only the 2%. Taking Mamo aside then for a second, Sam, who are you picking out the other 3? Who's ones that's impressed you the most?
I think the one that surprised me the most was
not answering
Larte.
The question, Dennis. Straight away, he's gone off topic.
No, was Larte, because I wasn't expecting much from him. So I suppose I'd have to say him. He exceeded my expectation.
Mm. What's your coffee drink, Sam? What'd you go for?
Cappuccino. But I'd hope for a bit more of a proper one rather than basically a latte with a bit of froth at the top, because that's what they tend to be here. You tend to get too much milk.
Thanks for that, barista. The second vote was, there's been much positive debate over Ashton and Ratchford positional dilemma. So how would you like to see them line up? We gave 4 options. Gee, there's a few permutations here. A, Ratchford at 1, Ashton at 2 or 5. B, Ashton at 1, Ratchford at 13. C, Ashton at 1, Ratchford at 6 or 7. Or D, Ashton at 1, Ratchford at 3 or 4. The 3 or 4 with Ratchford playing centre only got 4%. Ashton at 1 with Ratchford in the halves got 18%. Ashton at 1 and Ratchford at 13 got 35%. But the winner was Ratchford at 1, Ashton at 2 or 5. With 43%. It's a great little dilemma we've got going on. I mean, for once, we've started to get good dilemmas.
Nail my colours to the mast.
Underpants.
I would be voting A at this stage. Mm. Maybe not next year. But one thing, and this is a pet hate of mine, and I'll try not to go off on one. Ratchford at 1, Ashton at 2 or 5. I'd so wish we'd go back to wearing bloody positional numbers instead of one player wearing 97 and one player wearing 2. You look at a squad list these days on BBC or on Sky, and they put them in numerical order. You've not got a clue.
Predictions.
We can predict the future. Or resist the inevitable urge to try.
Good afternoon to you. Earlier on today, apparently, a woman rang the BBC and said she heard that there was a hurricane on the way. Well, if you're watching, don't worry, there isn't.
Warrington, but can I do it with a caveat, please?
Yes, it's on to predictions. Next up for Warrington, it's back to Super League and a game against Catalans. Dennis, Sam, do you think the Wolves will be in for a fiery encounter against the Dragons, or will Wire have the magic to put their puff out and slay their Catalonian characteristics?
I've seen Catalans play a few times, a bit hot and cold, actually. I think with our newfound sort of verve, with the fact that we've played like, you know, a full squad of the past few weeks, I think that's really created this challenge to play for places. And, you know, I think that should continue, and Price should recognise you don't have to be forced into dropping players if you want to sort of, you know, make sure that you're playing your best team. So don't just keep, you know, throwing the same old players in there and expecting it to happen. And I think if we take that sort of initiative and then right the way through, we'll win against Catalan. But if you don't look at the, you know, how we played this week and recognize,
bring back tackle bags, for fuck's sake.
You know, recognize that there's a few, you know, like shocking displays there. Then
You still talking?
I'm not got a clue what you're going on about. Other than the fact I've said you've said we'll win.
You know what it is? I've been writing down a new tackle bag idea about oil.
Oh, you're all excited, haven't you? Get dermatitis from oil if you're not careful.
Yeah, it depends where you put it.
I think we will win. I think this is a huge game for us. Catalan
this
sit
is better.
Fifth. Catalan sit fifth, and if we win, we drop Catalans down to just 55% win rate, and we basically seal that top four. So it's also at home, I think, isn't it? We're playing it.
Yes.
We're playing at Halliwell Jones next week. And the fact that several of our stars, our normal first team, have had 2 weeks off and then got all the rustiness out of the system against St Helens. Everything should point to a win.
And Widdup's back. So
he's available, isn't he? Yeah.
No, I like it. Available. I like it. Available. I like it.
At this stage.
I think he'll play. Available. I think he'll play Widdup, and he might choose to give one player, maybe two players, a rest.
So he's going to drop Ashton.
I'll go for Catalans. Oh, sorry, I won't go for Catalans at all. No, I will. I'll go for Catalans. Makes it easier in the edit. Okay, that's it for another podcast. You know what to do. Come garglers. Tweet to @WhatBevan. Email to whatbevan@gmail.com. Or if, rather than enjoying a three-course dinner with your family around the dining table whilst debating the topics of the day, you prefer sitting in front of the telly each night, eating your shitty microwave meal with your six kids, there's always Facebook. So as the Wire head back home to the Halliwell Jones to take on the French, from a man accustomed to eating cake for his tea rather than a loaf of bread, it's a revolutionary au revoir from Sam.
I'm going to divorce myself from that preamble as well. Au revoir.
And according to this north of the river Seine peasant, his ancestors invented the guillotine. Perhaps we'll cut his bollocks off during tackle bags. It's a resistance, listen very carefully, à platard from Dennis.
Bassagnon!
I'm Rob Paris. I'm off up the Champs-Élysées to have a glatte with Gérard Depardieu. You've been listening to Qui d'abord, Brian Devine.
Very good, that. Yeah. I almost understood it.
Got a baguette up my ass.
Touch me, I'm a real live wire. Psycho killer. Qu'est-ce que c'est? Ba 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 ba.